White Network presents the International Jew Study Hour. Reading and commentary on Henry Ford's great classic about Jewish power in America.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the, March 20th, 2013, we call this the episode of the International Jew Study Hour. And I want to thank you for being here with us tonight. My name is Carolyn Yeager, and
I'm Hadding Scott.
Hi, Hadding. How are you tonight?
I'm just fine.
I'm feeling pretty good, too. It's bright daylight outside. This daylight savings time, I really don't like it. And it's hard for me to get used to it, but it's strange that it's still like daytime, and probably as the show is coming to an end, it'll still be light, but it won't be that light, and it starts getting a little bit dim. All right, well, we have got a pretty long chapter tonight, and we're starting out with a brand new chapter, chapter 35, and in order to complete it, which we want to do because that works out a lot better than to have to carry one over from week to week. So I'm probably not going to have too much to say. And I think this chapter is very explanatory. It doesn't need too much comment or explanation either. What do you think?
Well, yeah, it was pretty clear.
Okay, and you read so clearly. And I want to comment here that, I'm always impressed with your reading. And when I listen to the shows, I find it so easy to follow this text because of your very good diction and the clear way that you pronounce the words and your very good way of reading. You hardly ever make a mistake. So, and I know people appreciate that too. So
well,
I'll
thank
just
you very
let,
much.
Well, you're welcome. So I'll just let you get started and we'll forge right ahead.
All right. International Jew, chapter 35. Jewish rights clash with American rights. It is well that the public should understand that the present study of the Jewish question in the United States is not based upon religious differences. The religious element does not enter except when it is injected by the Jews themselves. And it is injected in three ways. First, in their allegation that any study of the Jews is religious persecution. Second, by their own records of what their activities in the United States consist of. Third, by the impression, which is very misleading if not corrected, that the Jews are the Old Testament people of the Old Testament religion, which is so highly regarded in the Christian world. I should point out that Judaism actually, as I recall, it didn't exist until the 4th century A.D. What we call Judaism today isn't even as old as Christianity. And the identity preachers point out correctly mm-hmm. that the religion that was the forerunner of rabbinical Judaism was Pharisaism, which, of course, was those were the chief enemies of Jesus.
So are you saying that Judaism began in Babylon? With the exile of Babylon?
Rabbinical Judaism started in the 4th century A.D.
Yeah, where?
I'm not sure, but that's when it started. You can read that in the Encyclopedia Judaica.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to think of when the exile was and when they came back, when they returned. Was that before 4th century A.D.?
I think all that stuff was B.C., but
I'm confused. Okay, well, sorry. Maybe I'll take a little look here.
Because Jesus, he was around 0 A.D.
Yeah.
And so 4th century A.D. is 4 centuries after that.
I know, but the Christian church hadn't formed until the third, third or fourth century, really. It was in the 300s when they had
the religion started supposedly by its preceptor, Jesus the Christ, circa 20 to 30 AD, right? Yeah. So rabbinical Judaism, Judaism as it's called today, is actually more recent than Christianity.
That's an interesting concept. Okay, go ahead.
The Jews are not the Old Testament people, and the Old Testament, their Bible, can be found among them only with difficulty. They are a Talmudical people who have preferred the volumes of rabbinical speculation to the words of their ancient prophets. The note of religion does not enter this discussion until the Jews place it there. In this series of articles, we have set aside every non-Jewish statement on this question and have accepted only that which proceeds from recognized Jewish sources. And, of course, he must be referring only, well, from this point, he's saying that they've set aside non-Jewish sources because there were some earlier chapters that did cite some non-Jewish sources, like Lord Percy. But at this point, they're only using Jewish sources. It has been more than a surprise in studying the proceedings of the New York Kehillah and the American Jewish Committee and their affiliated organizations, as represented by their activities throughout the country, to learn how large a part of these activities have a religious bearing, as being directly and combatively anti-Christian. That is to say, when the Jews set forth in the public character, public charters and constitutions of their organizations that their only purpose is to protect Jewish rights, and when the public asks what are these Jewish rights which need protection in this free country, the answer can be found only in the actions which the Jews take to secure that protection. The actions interpret the words. And thus interpreted, Jewish rights seem to be summed up in the right to banish everything from their sight and hearing that even suggests Christianity or its founder. It is just there, from the Jewish side, that religious intolerance makes its appearance. Just there. Yeah. What follows in the course of this article is nothing less than or nothing less nor more than a group of citations from Jewish records covering a number of years. It is given here partly as an answer to the charge that this series of articles is religious persecution, and partly to help interpret by official actions the official Jewish program in the United States. An important fact is that previous to the formation of the Kehillah and the Jewish Committee, this sort of attack on the rights of Americans was sporadic. But since 1906, it has increased in number and insistence. Heretofore, it has gone unheeded by the public as a whole because of our general tolerance in this country. But from this time forth, the country will possess information that what it has been tolerating is intolerance itself.
Now, wouldn't it be nice if we could say things like that now and get people to listen? You know, point that out.
I'm sure some people are saying that.
Well, yeah.
Under cover of the ideal of liberty, we have given certain people liberty to attack liberty. We ought at least to know when that is being done. Look rapidly down the years and see one phase of that attack. It is the attack on Christianity. That is rather a hard thing to set down in writing in this country, and it would not be set down did not the facts compel it. Jewish writers nowadays show a great deal of anxiety that non-Jews should follow certain Christian doctrines. We gave you your Savior, and he told you to love your enemies. Why don't you love us? Is the implication with which their statements usually come. However, here are a few items from the record. They are recorded according to the Jewish calendar, our modern calendar being Christian, and therefore taboo. But here, both calendar dates shall be supplied. Jewish year 5661, which is AD 1899 to 1900. The Jews attempt to have the word Christian removed from the Bill of Rights of the State of Virginia.
I thought that was interesting. It brought to my mind, even though I've known these calendar dates.
Your audio is messed up there.
Oh, let me see. Can you hear me now?
You sound like you're gurgling, but...
I think there must be some bad connection or something. Maybe it's all in between you and I and not the listeners. So I'll go ahead. The idea that they want to use their own years, naturally, since the modern calendar is actually a Christian calendar, that is, it starts with the birth of, Christ, the death of Christ, and goes on from there, so they would never use that, would they? So they continue all this time, 2,000 years, using their own, and try to make out that they're, that they're going on 6,000 years old as a group.
Yeah, well, what they've done is they've compelled they've replaced Anno Domini, A.D., with C.E., Common Era.
I know they have. There was a lot of complaint when they did that, and yet it hasn't changed it. However, a lot of people don't use it. They still use the A.D. And that's the thing to do, if you feel strongly about it.
Yeah, it's probably the same people use CE instead of AD as, we'll say, African American instead of black. It's probably the same group of people there. All right. 5667 in the Jewish calendar, which is AD 1906-1907. The Jews of Oklahoma petition the Constitutional Convention, protesting that the acknowledgement of Christ in the new state constitution, then being formulated, would be repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. Actually, under the 14th Amendment, they have an argument there. 5668 on the Jewish calendar, which is AD 1907-1908.
Well, at the end of this show, we might have some time. Let's go back to that question, okay?
Okay.
Why you say that? Because you brought up the 14th Amendment last week, too. Am I still gurgling?
You sound a little better now.
Okay.
All right, 5668 on the Jewish calendar, which is AD 1907-1908. Widespread demand by the Jews during this year for the complete secularization of the public institutions of this country as a part of the demand of the Jews for their constitutional rights. Supreme Court Justice Brewer's statement that this is a Christian country, widely controverted by Jewish rabbis and publications. Oh, you betcha. I'm just going to give the Christian years now, because the Jewish years don't mean anything to the vast majority of people. AD 1908-1909. Protests made to Governor of Arkansas against Christological expressions employed by him in his Thanksgiving Day Proclamation, 1908. Professor Gotthard Deutsch protests against Christological prayers at the high school graduating exercises at Cincinnati. By the way, anytime you see anybody with the surname Deutsch, that is not a German. That's a Jew.
Germans give themselves the last name of German, do they?
Yeah.
I'm Joe German. Yeah.
Yeah. AD 1912-1913, the alarming growth of the Jewish population in New York makes it necessary for businessmen advertising for clerks or secretaries or housewives advertising for help to specify where Jewish help was not desired. Otherwise, the flood of Jewish applicants was overwhelming. The expressions Christian preferred or Jews please do not apply are used. This year, the New York Kehillah takes the matter in hand, stating that these advertisements indicate an alarming growth of discrimination against the Jews, and it is remarkable that many firms which cater to the trade of Jews display this form of prejudice. AD 1918-1919. The American Jewish Committee took up the alleged discrimination against Jews by army contractors. Louis Marshall, president of the committee, notified Newton D. Baker, Secretary of War, that advertisements had appeared calling for carpenters to work in government camps, and that the advertisements required the applicants to be Christians. Secretary Baker replied that he had made an order prohibiting contractors from making this discrimination. In parentheses, on the whole, this special form of advertisement may appear rather stupid. How many Jewish carpenters are there? Not enough to discriminate against. But there were doubtless other reasons. Provost Marshall Crowder, in charge of the selective draft, had issued an order to all medical examiners under direction of the Surgeon General stating, "The foreign-born, especially Jews, are more apt to malinger than the native-born." And Louis Marshall again telegraphed both the Provost Marshal and the Surgeon General, demanding that the further use of this form shall at once be discontinued, that every copy of it that has been issued should be recalled by telegram, and that proper explanations be made so as to expunge from the archives of the United States the unwarranted stigma upon 3 millions of people.
You know, at that time, here they're saying that the foreign-born are more apt to malinger than the native-born, and they probably, you think they meant all the foreign-born, or do you think that was some kind of code for Jews? Because, you know, the immigrants are supposed to be such hard workers. Even now they tell us, all the immigrants are better workers than the people who, you know, who are already here. That's why they're so valuable and we want to have them. And at that time, I'm sure, you know, there was the idea these immigrants come and they're going to work very hard to get ahead and get themselves stabilized in the new country and so on. But they're saying opposite of that.
Well, I think they're probably talking mainly about Jews there, because Jews don't, Jews have that, tend to have that kind of reputation in a lot of countries that they're not really patriotic and so forth.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. I guess they're saying foreign born, but maybe they really do mean Jews.
Yeah.
That's a nice way to put it.
It was President Wilson, however, who eventually ordered the excision of this paragraph. The United States Shipping Board sent an advertisement to the New York Times calling for a file clerk and stating that a Christian, by which is always meant a non-Jew, was preferred. The ad was not published as written. It was changed so that it requested applicants to state their religion and nationality. This last form would seem to be far more objectionable than the other. In the first instance, the employer states fairly what he wants. In the second instance, the applicant is compelled to divulge certain facts about himself in utter ignorance of the employer's preference. In the first instance, only the two classes that can do business get together. In the second instance, there's no clearness about the situation until much useless effort is undertaken. Why? Because the Kehillah demands it. And why does the Kehillah demand it? Because while it is all right for a Jew to remember that he is a Jew, it is not all right for you to remember it. So Louis Marshall got into action again with the shipping board, this time with certain drastic demands. Strangely enough, the protest was lodged through Bainbridge Colby, who was Woodrow Wilson's last Secretary of State. Mr. Marshall demanded, "Not because of any desire for inflicting punishment, but for the sake of example and the establishment of a necessary precedent, this offense should be followed by a dismissal from the public service of the offender, and the public should be informed of the reason." Angry Jew there. Attention
well,
is particularly...
demanding, you know? It's that demand, such a demanding way of saying things, you know, not being nice about it at all. This is this arrogance. And they probably feel that this is what works best. If they really demand, you know, rather than ask, they'll get further.
Oh, Jews have been notorious for throwing collective tantrums since ancient times. You know, there were massacres carried out by Jews in like Kyrene, and in the Book of Acts, it talks about, I believe it talks about Jews rioting against Christian proselytism.
Mm-hmm.
Attention is particularly called to the tone which Mr. Marshall adopts when addressing high American officials in the name of the Jewish Committee. It is not to be duplicated in the addresses of any other representatives of other nationalities or faiths. Unfortunately for Mr. Marshall's plan of punishment, the object of his wrath was found to be a woman, and she was not discharged, although the Jewish Committee got an apology from Charles M. Schwab. The Federal Reserve Bank and Liberty Loan Committee also got in wrong when an advertisement was printed calling for a stenographer for the Liberty Loan Committee, parentheses, Christian. Protest was made to Benjamin Strong, governor of the Federal Reserve Bank and chairman of the Liberty Loan Committee, and the advertisement was withdrawn. But this was not enough. Secretary of the Treasury McAdoo was also drawn in to express his reprobation for an unpatriotic act. An officer in the quartermaster's department replied to a young woman who applied for the position of secretary to him that he preferred not to have Jews on his office staff. He was reprimanded upon the request of Mr. Marshall.
Yeah, see how busy Marshall was. He was the president. Well, he wasn't. He founded it, but then after a few years, he became the president and remained president until he died. And so it's always him, you know, that was. And he had this status for some reason, and it was always him writing and complaining every little thing, just like Abe Foxman does today. Only Marshall, I think, did have some more respectability than Foxman, but maybe not.
Yeah. Well, he probably didn't have other Jews making films about him,
right?
Like that. What is it? I don't remember the name of it now.
Yeah, but he was in a law firm. Yeah, he was supposedly a respected jurist and lawyer. He never did become a judge, though, as far as I know.
The Plattsburgh Manual, published for officers in the United States officers' training camps, contained the statement that the ideal officer is a Christian gentleman. Mr. Marshall at once made the standard protest against all Christological manifestations, and the manual was changed to read, "The ideal officer is a courteous gentleman." 5680 AD, which is 5680 on the Jewish calendar, which is AD 1919 to 1920. In this year, the Kehillah was so successful in its New York campaign that it was possible for a Jewish advertiser in New York to say that he wanted Jewish help. But it was not possible for a non-Jewish advertiser to state his non-Jewish preference. This is a sidelight both on Jewish reasonableness and Jewish power.
Yeah.
That's a forerunner of a very common form of discrimination that we see today, you know, where blacks can have all black charter schools. But, you know, white folks, no, we can't do that.
Yeah, that's right. And here these Jews were getting, you know, being allowed to do things and say things and that they wouldn't allow the rest of us, and we went along with it.
Yep.
Should have clamped down on these guys right in the beginning.
One gathers that a few people are still hugging the delusion that there is no Jewish question in the United States. But another glance down the records will show the most prejudiced person that there is such a question. If space permitted, the few details added below could be matched by a sufficient number to overflow all the pages of this paper. AD 1907-1908. Jews agitate in many cities against Bible reading, Christmas celebrations, or carols. In Philadelphia, Cincinnati, St. Paul, and New York, the Jewish opposition to the carols is met with strong counter-movements. AD 1908-1909. Jewish community at Tamaqua, Pennsylvania, defeats resolution providing daily Bible reading in the schools. Jews attempting some compulsion in New Jersey are met with decision that pupils may absent themselves from devotional exercises. Jewish agitation in Louisiana stirs ministerial association to defend the right of the school to the Bible. Local Council of Jewish Women of Baltimore petitions school board to prohibit Christmas exercises. On demand of Edwin Wolfe, Jewish member, Philadelphia School Board prohibits Christmas exercises. Jews present bills asking that New York Hebrews be permitted to ply trades and businesses on Sunday. Interdenominational Ministers Conference takes official action, and Reverend Dr. David J. Burrell of the Marble Collegiate Church states that the attempts of Jews to undermine the sanctity of Sunday are ethically unjustifiable. AD 1909-1910. On demand of Jews, the school board of Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, votes to discontinue the recitation of the Lord's Prayer in the schools. In Kentucky State Senate, Jews defeat the Titchener Bill, making the Bible a book eligible for the schools.
Now, how can the Jews defeat it? You know, they're in Kentucky, in the Kentucky State Senate. I have a hard time understanding this. In 1910, and the Jews managed to defeat this bill that says that the Bible could be, used in the school. Now, maybe they were going to use the Bible for reading lessons or something. I suppose I would maybe not go along with that.
Well,
you know, they might have been doing that in Kentucky.
Doesn't take a lot of Jews if they're so organized and they've got some money behind them. They don't have enough money to get their way. They can get some money from elsewhere, you know.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
If non-Jews are trying to fight something. I think usually they have to rely on local resources. You know?
Yeah, and then they'll start disagreeing among themselves. They're not as disciplined from on high. But, you know, it could be that some of these people, I wouldn't think the whole state, though, were going to use the Bible for a reading book, you know? I mean, that wouldn't seem to make too much sense. They used to do that long ago, probably in the 1800s and 1700s or something.
I think Bible reading in schools was probably still done in the 1930s, at least. And probably.
Well, I mean, reading the Bible for a special, you know, opening of the school or, you know, a special little reverence section. But I mean, I'm talking about using the Bible as a reading text, you know, mm-hmm. like when you're, instead of Dick and Jane, you know, it used to be, you're going to read the Bible to learn how to read. And that seemed like it would be kind of, but at one time they did do that, long, long ago, mm-hmm. because they didn't have as many textbooks, I guess. So.
Right.
All right, I suppose that's
okay, 1910, 1911. Jews oppose Bible reading and singing of hymns in Detroit schools. New York State Federation of Labor opposes Jewish bill to exempt Jews from prosecution for violating Sunday laws. The workman knows that it means a seven-day week for the goy. New York Kehillah does two contradictory things. Favors bill to permit Jews to do all kinds of business on Sunday, and pledges itself to cooperate in the strict enforcement of the Sunday laws. They were not sincere on one side of that.
Yeah, they were trying to keep their agenda going, and so they didn't want to appear to be too much against the other side. So.
Oh, sure, we'll help with the enforcement of your Sunday laws. You just won't have them much longer. Yeah. Okay, 1911, 1912. Upon the urgence of two Jews, the Hartford, Connecticut School Board votes on the question of abolishing all religious exercises in the schools. The motion is lost by 5-4. Jewish pupils in a Passaic, New Jersey school petition the Board of Education to eliminate the Bible and all Christian songs from the school.
I think this Bible business is mostly just to have a Bible reading, you know, like to open the school day or something at some point, you know. At this time, it was not ever meaning to use the Bible as a textbook. So.
At the request of a rabbi, three principals of Roxbury, Massachusetts public schools agree to banish the Christmas tree and omit all references to the season in their schools. Jewish pupils of Plainfield, New Jersey petition the abolition of the Bible and Christian songs from the schools. The Council of the University Settlement, at the request of the New York Kehillah and the Federation of Romanian Jews, adopts this resolution. Oops. Wait a second. Oh, I went the wrong way here. Okay, here we go. Okay, the Jews adopted this resolution that in holiday celebrations held annually by the Kindergarten Association at the University Settlement, every feature of any sectarian character, including Christmas trees, Christmas programs, and Christmas songs, and so on, shall be eliminated. Yeah. Philadelphia Kehillah demands that Jews be exempted from operation of the Sunday laws. In the Outlook, Dr. Lyman Abbott advises an inquiring schoolmaster that he is under no moral obligation to admit Jews to his private school. A Jewish delegate to the Ohio Constitutional Convention suggests that the Constitution be made to forbid religious references in the schools. Jewish merchants of Paterson, New Jersey petition for exemption from the Sunday laws. Board of Education of Yonkers, New York denies Jewish request to forbid singing of Christian songs in the schools.
Well, good for them. You know, I think people, I bet some people are surprised. I certainly was when I first read this. When you think about how far back this goes, that they were saying we couldn't have Christmas celebrations. And, you know, we think that's something a little bit more recent, you know, in the last 20 years or so, but it isn't. They've always, and this chapter points that out very clearly, and that's one of the main points of the whole chapter, is that they've always gone after Christianity. That was the first thing they went after, and they're still doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, although now they've found ways to make use of Christianity.
Well, you know, I don't know.
Christian Zionism and all that.
Well, that, but that's, I don't know that that really, that just came about on its own. I don't think they invented that. They didn't invent that. These Christians invented it, and they've just moved in and, you know, taken advantage of it. But it's really these.
There's a writer named Cliff Kirikov who's written about how Zionist Jews have deliberately mobilized premillennialist Christians in support of the State of Israel.
Well, they have done that in the sense, yeah, there is the Scofield Bible. And I do go along with the idea that the Jews were behind that. So yeah, I guess they were. I guess they are behind it. Then that fits the conspiratorial view, padding, which you don't like to go along with, that the Jews are behind everything.
Well, there are Jewish conspiracies regarding certain issues.
Oh yeah. Well, see, then you can pick the ones. You can pick the ones you want.
I just don't think that the protocols are authentic, and I think the conspiring is more ad hoc than monolithic.
Well, when we read this whole chapter here, it looks pretty monolithic. I mean, it's kind of weird how they're going at this. And like you say, maybe it's that when they couldn't beat Christianity, they also had this plan then to undermine it, which of course they would. And so they did work hard with this Christian Zionism because they were behind that Scofield Bible, which is how they got people to go along with it.
Yeah, you can also see more recent instances where the Zionists they cater directly to Christian Zionists. They give their leaders free trips to Israel. There are some media outreaches that the Zionists make to Christians. I don't know if you've ever seen this infomercial that the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews.
I've seen all that stuff. Yeah, I know. They do. So that is a real big business. They have a lot of organizations, and give a lot of gifts to all these Christian groups, and they have them travel to Israel. And oh, brother, it's so sickening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I believe Rush Limbaugh received one of those free trips to Israel, and I know Glenn Beck did.
Yeah, if you're a major figure, all you have to do is indicate you might want one, and they'll give you a paid trip. It's no skin off their back.
All right, 1912-1913. Annual convention, Independent Order of B'nai B'rith at Nashville, Tennessee, adopts resolution against reading the Bible and singing Christian songs in public schools. Jews at Jackson, Tennessee, seek an injunction to prevent the reading of the Bible in city schools. Jews of Nashville, Tennessee, petition Board of Education against Bible and Christian songs. Richmond, Virginia School Board restores Bible reading in the schools. Bill introduced into Pennsylvania legislature providing for Bible reading in schools and the discharge of teachers omitting to do so. Jewish rabbis protest against bill. Jewish Kehillah of Philadelphia sends telegram to governor, urging him to veto bill. Governor approves bill. Chicago Board of Education, scene of much Jewish agitation, approves recommendation of subcommittee to remove Christmas from the list of official holidays in public schools. In response to the demands of Jews, the Revere, Massachusetts School Board consents to remove references to Jesus from Christmas exercises in the public schools. This action, however, was rescinded at a special meeting. California Jews appeal before Senate Committee on Public Morals to protest against a proposed Sunday law. At Passaic, New Jersey, 29 Jewish members of the senior high school class walk out of class election, alleging racial discrimination. At Atlantic City, New Jersey, during the National Convention of the United States War Veterans, the proposal to restore the cross as part of the insignia of chaplain was defeated by Jews. 1913-1914, this year, the energies of the Jewish powers were concentrated on the task of preventing the United States from changing the immigration laws in a manner to protect the country from undesirable aliens.
Well, this was also the year that the Federal Reserve was passed, in 1913, or the very end of 1912. And also the ADL, the Bonnie-Bryth. Was Bonnie-Bryth already existed? I guess they formed the ADL in 1913. So they were really, they had a lot of things going on right here to energize their movement.
1914-1915. Jewish rabbi demands of California State Superintendent of Public Instruction that some verses appearing in school readers be eliminated. New York Kehillah concerns itself with attempts to secure modification of the Sunday laws. 1915-1916. This year, occupied by opposition to various movements toward making the schools free to use the Bible, and in opposition to the Gary system. The Gary system receives a great deal of attention from the Jews this year. Don't know about that.
Me either.
1916-1917. Jews are busy carrying out an immense campaign against the literacy clause of the immigration bill. Well, yeah, heaven forbid that we should have standards for our immigrants.
That's right.
And so it goes on. The incidents quoted are typical, not occasional. They represent what is transpiring all the time in the United States as the Jews pursue their rights. There is no interference whatever with Jewish ways and manners. The Jew may use his own calendar, keep his own days, observe his own form of worship, live in his own ghetto, exist on a dietary principle all his own, slaughter his cattle in a manner of which no one else knows about it, no one else who knows about it can approve. He can do all these things without molestation, without the slightest question of his right in them. But the non-Jew is now the persecuted one. He must do everything the way the Jew wants it done. If not, he is infringing on Jewish rights. Americans are...
No, I'm just... can't keep myself from making little humming noises here.
Americans are very sensitive about infringing on other people's rights. The Jews might have gone on for a long time had they not overplayed their hand. What the people are now coming to see is that it is American rights that have been interfered with, and the interference has been made with the assistance of their own broad-mindedness. The Jews' interference with the religion of others, and the Jews' determination to wipe out of public life every sign of the predominant Christian character of the United States, is the only active form of religious intolerance in the country today. But there is still another phase of this matter. Not content with the fullest liberty to follow their own faith in peace and quietness, in a country where none dares make them afraid, the Jews declare, we read it in their activities, that every sight and sound of anything Christian is an invasion of their peace and quietness. And so they stamp it out wherever they can reach it through political means. To what lengths this spirit may run is shown in the prophecies of the Talmud and in the reforms undertaken by the Bolsheviki of Russia and Austria. I guess he means Hungary, actually. They're Bela Kun.
Yeah, Austria-Hungary, I guess they mean there.
In Austria, I don't believe the...
No, I couldn't really control. Sound right, but maybe somebody cut the other word out or something. Who knows?
Yeah, well, it's actually Hungary. Hungary had been, you know, part of Austria at one point. Mm-hmm. But even that is not all. Not content with their own liberty, not content with the secularization, which means the de-Christianization of all public institutions. The third step observable in Jewish activities is the actual exaltation of Judaism as a recognized and specially privileged system. The program is the now familiar one wherever the Jewish program is found. First, establishment. Second, destruction of all that is non-Jewish or anti-Jewish. Third, exaltation of Judaism in all its phases. Put the Lord's Prayer and certain Shakespeare plays out of the public schools, but put Jewish courts in the public buildings. That is the way it works. Secularization is preparatory to Judaization. The New York Kehilla is an illustration of how it is all done, and the American Jewish Congress is an illustration of the type of men who do it.
Okay, the American Jewish Committee, there is an American Jewish Congress, but I think it came along a little bit later.
I misspoke. Yeah, the American Jewish Congress, I believe, was formed in 1933.
Oh, really? Okay.
Now for the illustrations of the third phase of the program of defending Jewish rights. The year 5669 on the Jewish calendar, which is AD 1908-1909, was marked by an effort to introduce the idea of the Jewish Sabbath into public business. Jews refused to sit as jurors in court, thus postponing cases. Boycotts were instituted in New York against merchants who opened on Saturday. That this campaign has borne fruit is known by all travelers in eastern cities who notice that even large department stores are closed on Saturday.
Not in my town. Well, of course, I didn't live at that time. But, I never saw anything like that where I lived, any of this. The Jews were there for sure. But they didn't have this kind of power, and they weren't trying to exercise it either. But maybe this was happening more in these early 1900 than it was, say, in the 50s and 60s and stuff.
Okay. The Jewish year 5670, which is AD 1909-1910, was dedicated apparently to the work of introducing the idea of Jewish national holidays into public life. This question lately rose in New York in a threatening way, but was withdrawn just before the breaking point. Only temporarily withdrawn, however. The feint revealed the identity and number of those who are still on guard against the complete Judaization of their city. Jewish members of stock exchanges endeavored to have these institutions recognize Yom Kippur by closing. In Cleveland, this was done. The Council of Jewish Women appealed to the Civil Service Commission at Washington for recognition of Jewish holidays. In Newark, New Jersey, the rabbis asked the night schools to discontinue Friday evening sessions because the Jewish Sabbath begins at sundown on Friday. In 1911, an attempt to have Hebrew officially recognized was frustrated by Supreme Court Judge Goff, who refused incorporation of Agadut Achim Kahal Adat Yeshurun on the ground that the title should be in English. Chicago Jews have election date changed because the official date fell on the last day of the Passover. In 1912-1913, a number of special recognitions of the Saturday Sabbath were obtained, including Jersey City, Bayonne, Hoboken, Union Hill. In the Ohio legislature, the Jews defeated a bill fixing a certain Saturday as the date of a primary election. In 1913-1914, the United States Bureau of Immigration granted the request of Simon Wolf, longtime Jewish lobbyist at Washington, that instructions be given the immigration commissioners that no Jews be deported on Jewish holidays. Well, if they not on a Jewish holiday, how can you do that? It's inhuman. The Women's Party of Cook County, Illinois, passes resolutions against allowing Jewish teachers to draw full pay for absence during Jewish holidays. In this year also, the question of the Jews' method of slaughtering animals, the Shehita, was brought forward. The American Jewish Committee thought this question of sufficient importance to engage its full interest. This series of facts could also be pursued at length. Kosher food for the children of public schools, because there were children, Jewish children, in the schools. Protest against the daylight saving ordinances, because they were prejudicial to Jewish merchants who closed their businesses on Saturday and opened them after nightfall on that day. This is an illustration of the large number of small points at which Jewish life conflicts with the community life. And of course, each of these divergences is ground for an imperious demand. Harvard University was severely criticized in 1917-1918 for refusing to set aside an entrance examination date that conflicted with a Jewish holiday. Since that time, however, Eastern universities have become more pliable. And of course, today, Harvard is dominated by Jews, mm-hmm. and the Ivy Leagues in general. But the whole course of the Christian year would have to be changed, and all the traditional seasonal customs of the country broken up, if the Jews are to be given the full measure of liberty which they demand. Of course, the work of the Kehillah is claimed to be educational. It certainly is that. The best educated members are those who come from the ghettos of Galatia, where the Kehillah idea is fully understood, and the Jewish community government exercises unrestricted sway. Galatia is in central Turkey.
Right.
Whatever other phases of education the Kehillah may be interested in, it certainly stresses most the education to separateness. The New York Times especially likes to emphasize this matter of education. It is a convenient description and somewhat aids in the effort to minimize the Kehillah's importance when it is under scrutiny. Nevertheless, in the New York Times, an article appeared about the Kehillah in which Dr. S. Benderly, director of the Bureau of Education, is quoted as describing the objects of the education. The problem before us was to form a body of young Jews who should be, on the one hand, true Americans, a part of this republic, with an intense interest in upbuilding, I never saw that word before, in upbuilding American ideals. And yet, on the other hand, be also Jews in love with the best of their own ideals, and not anxious merely to merge with the rest and disappear among them.
You know, it's possible he wasn't even a Jew. Well, I suppose he was, but was trying to be helpful to the Jews.
Well, he's definitely catering to their needs.
Yes, he is, absolutely.
The problem confronts Orthodox and Reform Jews alike. It is not merely a religious but a civic problem. Yeah, well, you know, for what he said there, he might as well be a sock puppet with a Jew behind him speaking yeah. while his mouth moves.
Right.
If he's not a Jew. Yeah. And, you know, when you think about something like that, it's just obvious on its face that letting the Jews in was going to lead to all kinds of problems.
You know, if you read fast, I'm just looking here. I thought we couldn't possibly finish, but maybe we can.
All right. That is separatism and exclusivism as an educational program, and its results cannot help being a cloud of difference such as this article has in part disclosed. The New York Kehillah, through its Bureau of Education, is giving a purely religious training to 200,000 Jewish children, the religious training being, of course, not what is generally understood by that term, but a training in ideas of racial superiority and separateness. This difference is strikingly illustrated in Jewish fiction recently. To love a Christian maiden is sinful. This is the theme of all sorts of stories, sketches, and editorials appearing these days. But James Gibbons Huneker, in a sketch extravagantly praised by Jewish critics, shows how deep this idea of separateness is when he makes Yankli Ostrovitz say, "As a child I trembled at the sound of music and was taught to put my finger in my ears when profane music, goy music, was played." This is the root idea. All Gentile life and institutions are profane. It is the Jew's unceasing consciousness of the goy that constitutes the disease of Judaism, this century-long tradition of separateness. There is no such thing as anti-Semitism. There is, however, much anti-goyism. In England, Germany, France, America, Russia, there is no anti-Arab sentiment of which anyone knows. None of the Semite people have been distinguished by the special dislike of any other people. There is no reason why anyone should dislike the Semites. It is very strange, however, that the Semitic people should be a unit in disliking the Jews. Palestine, which still has only a handful of Jews, is peopled by Semites who so thoroughly dislike the Jews that serious complications are threatening the Zionistic advances being made there. This surely is not anti-Semitism. Semites are not against Semites, but they are at odds with Jews. When Aryan and Semite are kept conscious through many centuries that the Jew is another race, and when it is known that neither Aryan nor Semite are touchy on the race question, what is the answer? Only this, that the whole substance of such a situation must be supplied by the Jews. There is no such thing as anti-Semitism. There is only a very little and very mild anti-Jewism. But a study of Jewish publications, books, pamphlets, declarations, constitutions, and charters, as well as a study of organized Jewish action in this and other countries, indicates that there is a tremendous amount of anti-goyism or anti-Gentilism. Not that it is anything to fear. It is, however, something to know. Knowledge is a good defense. The New York Kehillah, having as its executive committee the same committee which is also the ruling group of Jews known as District 12 of the American Jewish Committee, is worth consideration, not only as an illustration of the interlaced organization which combines all classes of Jews in one group, but also as an illustration of what is meant by Jewish rights. It is worth remembering that every demand voiced in Washington before officials and committees, that every high personage that appears there on Jewish matters, the Lewis Marshalls and the Wises, the Goldfogels, the Rosalskis, besides many others like the Kahns and Schiffs, who keep out of the committee limelight and away from the protesting parties, are all linked up through this Jewish interest or that, through this Jewish interest or that, with the main interest which is based on the Kehillah and expresses itself through District 12 of the American Jewish Committee, which is the New York District.
You did it, and we're ready to close off. You know, this chapter could take a lot of discussion. I mean, I think a lot could be gotten out of going into it more deeply. I don't know, but I suppose we'll just go on to Chapter 36 next week. But we'll think about it. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thanks very much, and good night, Hattie.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. The International Jew Study Hour will return next week, exclusively on the White Network.